is.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Man, what a monster game that was by LeBron.
Which we've seen over and over again. Jaylen Brown gets in, flushes hard with the left hand. And on a night, LeBron James becomes the NBA's all-time leading scorer against the Boston Celtics. He drops 44. And the Eastern Conference Finals, once a best of seven, is now a best of three. Cavs get game four by a final of 111-102. The best of three begins Wednesday night in Boston.
And here we are at the Garden. Felger Mass taking up until 6 o'clock. The game here is tonight at 8:30 at 98.5 The Sports Hub. The pregame starts at 8. So you want to stay right here on this channel all night long. We continue with your thoughts, Celts, Cavs, and the Brady situation. Michael in Medford. Go, Michael.
Michael, I agree with you on your Celtic evaluation at the beginning of the show. The 15 shots were a combination of dunks and layups, and they missed them. People on your left, they say it's the reason of being tight. To me, tight means like Jackie Bradley Jr. That's tight. And as far as Morris and Smart hitting long perimeter shots, they're just going to follow the coach's advice. Otherwise, if they're not, then he's not that great of a coach, and you're back to a palace queue with people doing what they want.
So here's what I think, Mike. I think the coach gives Smart and Morris the leeway to shoot their shots. That's why they do it so much.
Oh, I don't think there's any question he does.
But Stevens wants everybody shooting threes. He'll let Aaron Baines shoot threes so that they're
He let Amir Johnson do it.
Exactly. The question is, should Stevens not let them do it? And if I, you know, if my one little tweak for tonight is that I would just draw stuff up for Tatum early in the game because I think it's taken him too long to get into the offense. He had one shot, I think, in game three. Like, was it two shots in games four? I can't remember what it was.
In the first quarter, he went 0 for 3 in game four.
Okay, so he had three shots. But it's like, and maybe, and one of them was a dunk, right? I don't know. I would just make sure he's getting involved early because I think he's your best offensive player. So I would get Tatum more involved. But that other thing, missing the 15 dunks and layups, if it's not being tight, then what is it?
Well, see, so that, I was just going to say that. So just luck of the draw? Missing dunks is luck of the draw? To me, you're
I mean,
too...
don't tell me they're unfocused.
I don't think it's a focus thing.
No, but I'm saying that would be even worse.
So,
give me another explanation for other than tight.
Moving too fast.
The game speeds up.
Yeah, the game speeds up in your head, and so you start moving faster than you should. That's when I say you're moving too fast. Yes. Because the whole thing has, like, the intensity is increased, and now you're operating at a level where you're not as efficient. Like, your body gets out of whack, and now everything's a little off. So I think that's what it is. Now, could that all come back to earth here in this building? Of course.
I mean, the home road things are just... Gasper had some of those numbers, Maz. We all know 9-0 at home, 1-6 on the road. They average 110 points at home, 94 on the road.
Striking.
That is a mess. So that's not like just a little different. They're a completely different team. I mean, those numbers.
Did he have the defensive numbers in there too?
Let me give you some. They shoot 47% at home, 40 on the road. Huge gap. They're 38.7% from three at home, almost 39%. They're 30% on the road. Huge gap.
And overall, they've been 30% in the first quarter in Cleveland. Three and twos.
Opposing teams, so they allow only 98.8 points per game at the Garden, but 106 on the road. Okay, that's not a massive gap, but it's substantial. And then some of the individual players, like Rozier's the worst. On Causeway Street, he scores 20 a game and shoots 45.5% from three. On the road, he averages 13. And shoots 25.9. He's almost 20% better from three at home than he is on the road.
Yeah, brutal. I mean, it's like you look at it and say it's, you know, confidence and energy and having the crowd behind you and the support and all of it, which indicates really a mental fragility. I don't know any
but
other
way. But it's rampant throughout the league.
It totally is.
And that's so annoying. Again, they need to feel the love.
And J.R. Smith's a worthless loser bum.
Right. But he hits a three, and he hears the PA guy go, "Oh, J.R. Smith."
Well, it's the same guy here.
No, I know. I'm getting
Rozier deserves the same. 4-3, yeah. Or whatever they do here at the Garden.
A small segment of idiots chanting MVP.
And Rozier does the same thing. It's like, God, they're dealing with children. So the younger guys or the bums I sort of get. I don't consider Al Horford a bum or a loser or a kid. his numbers are just the same. Al Horford averages 12-7, seven rebounds, 12-7 on the road. At home, it's almost 20-9, and shoots 60% at home. Al Horford shouldn't be affected by home road.
He shouldn't.
It's been around a million years. He's a real pro, a professional, level-headed pro adult, and been around forever. And he, and the same thing happens to him. Like, that's the one that would disappoint me. It's like, come on, Al.
Absolutely. Look, I think you see a little of it in LeBron. Not as much, but a little. And so LeBron has to work harder, I think, on the road to give you the same numbers. But the bottom line is the whole league's soft.
A couple of Brady thoughts. Tom in the car. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, so my basic take is that I think this goes back to Deflategate in a bunch of ways. The first is we all remember Belichick kind of throwing Brady under the bus in the press conference. The second is that Brady, that's where Brady seemed to really kind of start in an entitled kind of way. You know, he didn't want to take his medicine. He let it drag out a lot. That brought, you know, Kraft into supporting him. And I bet a fair bit of money that Belichick kind of resented it because it, you know, prevented the team from focusing on the team. It was just a major distraction.
Okay.
That's my basic take.
Okay, I'm going to follow you up with Jim in Quincy. Go ahead, Jim. What's your thought?
Jim, this is Jim from Quincy.
It's you. Go.
No, I mean, I totally agree with Tom. Who has not earned the right more than Tom Brady to take a little more time off than some of the other guys? He's played more. He's prepared harder than anyone else. He's, you know, Deflategate, the whole thing. He's taking it on the chin. I mean, you worked hard, right? I mean, everyone works hard. You earn a little extra time off. I mean, guys won the 7 Super Bowls. Who's done that? Who's got better stats than him? He's earned it.
Okay, so there's that one. Let me just do one more, and then we'll answer all three. Kevin and Quincy. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, so my take is that I think Robert, at this point, maybe needs to step aside. And my thought here is, would he have handled this? You know, would he have handled it the same way when he originally bought the team? And I think that if Jonathan were in charge right now, I think Brady would probably be gone, and I think Garoppolo would be here, and I think Bill would be empowered, and I think that the entire situation would be much more normalized under Bill. Right now, it's all over the place because Robert is letting his emotions get the best of him when it comes to running the team, and he's not doing what's in the best interest of the franchise.
Let's go backwards from those three.
Kraft is definitely different now than he was at the beginning.
No. The way he's handling it is exactly the same as he would have handled it when he first got the team.
They traded Bledsoe.
And that sucks. That was after he owned the team for 6 years. When he first got the team.
Well, then my definition of the beginning is different than yours.
The beginning is 1994, 95, 96, that era. He bent over backwards for players. He erred on the side of overcompensating his players, giving them too much love, too much leeway, to the point where he overstepped some of his football people in the contracts. And he learned from those mistakes when Bill got here and started winning Bill's way, and then Kraft stepped aside. The way Kraft is acting now is how he would have acted when he first got the team, when he was starstruck and didn't know what he was doing. That's why, yes. So I think when he first owned the team, this is how... He's the one that gave Bledsoe the contract.
Sure.
Okay, so when Bill took over in 2000, that was right around the time Bledsoe signed for 10 years, $100 million or something. You think Belichick gave Bledsoe that contract?
No, I know he didn't. Just telling you that at the end of the day, they moved on from Bledsoe.
Okay, so I'm telling you that when Kraft first took over the team, this is how he acted. He deferred to players, and he learned his lesson, and then got smart and let Bill run the show. And now here at the end, Kraft is lapsing into the mistakes he made when he first bought the team. Would it be different under John Kraft, the caller said, that Bill would have the leeway? If John Kraft were fully in charge and Robert weren't around, I don't think Bill would be here. Just my sense that I don't know how Bill working for Jonathan would work. I'm not so convinced of that.
Okay, but again, try to assess it from the loyalty to Brady standpoint. If Jonathan were running the team, would he have been loyal to Brady over keeping Garoppolo? Do you follow me?
Yeah. I'm not sure about that. What do you think?
The variable to me is that his father wanted to be loyal to Brady, so Jonathan went along with it. I mean, when they did the interview with Andrea Kramer, I think it was Jonathan who said Tom Brady has the right to dictate when he's done playing.
So, caller, if Jonathan were running the show, I don't think it would be much different. I'm probably with Maz. Brady would still be here. They still would have traded Garoppolo, but you definitely would have lost Bill because Robert has some currency with Bill. I don't know what Jonathan's got. That's a more complicated one. I'm not sure totally there. Previous caller said Tom's earned the right. Not the point. not how they've been built, not how they run the team. And again, this goes back to the way they used to be run, which was wrong, which was giving the veterans and the stars too much leeway. Bruce Armstrong earned the right. This used to be a country club atmosphere. When Bill took over, this place is run like a country club. Because you know why? Because Robert Kraft and Bobby Grin, those guys,
empowered the players,
treated the players like they'd earned the right. And Belichick came in and said, you haven't earned squat. And even though Brady's earned plenty, it's just the mentality. So, yeah, has Brady earned the right? You can make that case. Not how they're run and not how good teams are run. And you know it.
See, I hate that argument of if anybody's earned the right. So what? So once you win a couple of titles, so really go back to 04. Once Brady won the third one in 04, there was no reining him in for anything.
Finally, did Deflategate start the whole issue?
It's yep.
Definitely a factor. But my point is not the fact that Brady and Bill hate each other. I mean, let's just say they do. I think we all assume that there's a real problem there with Brady and Belichick. And Deflategate was a big moment there, no question about it. And the whole dynamics of Kraft protecting Brady, all that. So it started there, fine. My issue is now, this week, the coach asks the players to be there. The most important one refuses to be there. And the owner says, it's voluntary. He's got off-season businesses. It's okay. That is so dysfunctional and so wrong on so many levels, I can't tell you.
Okay, but again, I think most of us agree on that point. The question is, where did the cracks start?
No, well, that's not the question. I mean, we all know.
Well, it's one of the questions.
Well, there's cracks. We know it.
Okay, so but again, when did Brady start to turn into the Brady he is now?
Okay, I think the thing with Bill, it was a confluence of...
I'm just going by what the caller asked is the question.
Deflategate, drafting of Garoppolo, not getting his contract, him, you know, become a different guy off the field with all of his endorsements. It all sort of came together. Deflategate was huge. Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. And if I were Brady, I'd be pissed about that. I think he's a right to be pissed about Deflategate.
He does have a right to be pissed about Deflategate. So my only question on Deflategate is whether the plan to push Bill away from it was strictly Bill or organizational. Because I'm willing to bet that the Krafts had a part in keeping Bill away from Deflategate and that it ended up on Brady and they didn't expect that.
The point is that we're here now and Brady's missing when the coach asks him to be there and the owner says, that's okay, it's just voluntary. So the rest of you guys down there in Foxborough, if you're listening, you can cut out. Robert, the owner said, these are just voluntary. So no need, especially if you have businesses or kids. So you can cut out, guys. No problem. See ya in June for that mini camp and then for the full camp at the end of July. Just take the rest of the day off.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Ooh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub.
I talked about his shooting and the improvement in his shooting has really taken going under pick and rolls away as an option over time. He is as smart of a basketball player as I've ever seen, and he deserves kudos for that. He's a heck of a player, and that's what makes this challenge fun.
Brad Stevens on today with Beadle and Zolak on LeBron James. Maz has an interesting point on that cut. Brad Stevens blowing smoke up LeBron James's skirt about being such a better shooter. And Maz had a thought on that.
So I think he's baiting him. I think it's that simple. He's baiting him. So the one thing Stevens has said here consistently since the end of game four to now when he's been asked about it, like he keeps defending the whole Rozier on defense in the switches. Okay, he keeps defending that over and over again. Well, we don't really think that's an issue. That's not really what cost us the game. He talks about the transition defense. And, you know, LeBron in transition is unstoppable. Just forget it. There's no chance. There's no coaching that can stop that. So then he comes out today, and they're talking about the series and talking about LeBron, and he starts lauding LeBron as a shooter. And I just look at it and say, what do you want LeBron doing in the half-court game?
Oh, you want him shooting threes.
You want him shooting from the outside. If he takes the ball to the basket, forget it. I mean, you're absolutely completely porked if that happens. So I think by praising LeBron's abilities as a shooter, I don't know, he kind of throws the cheese out there for him.
Jedi mind trick. I like it.
Let's see if LeBron takes the cheese and he starts hearing it today and it gets in his head and he comes into our building and he's willing to settle for jumpers. Because if the odds are that he will miss more than he makes, at least certainly relative to the paint. What was he in the paint the last game? I said this the other day. I think he was 14 of 17. And that includes, you know, little half jumpers from the elbow, little runners from the elbow, if that's what you want to call them. So the point is, within 15 feet of the hoop, forget it. The guy's a monster. Okay, so you got to push him out there. I think Stevens is getting in his head and trying to bait him. That's what I think it is.
Is this a big night for Brad Stevens?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if they lose this game, I think they're done. That's just my two cents. But I also look at it, and I feel like there is some...
Does Stevens need to have some answers tonight, man?
Yes. Yes, he does. Because I look at it and say, you know, I just feel like Stevens is, I don't want to say copping out a little bit, but, the whole defending the switching on LeBron in the half court, not the right answer. You got to find a way to get the ball. You keep LeBron getting twos, but you got to mitigate the guys on the outside. And I want to see how he answers this. Because if it's just him throwing up his hand saying, pick your poison.
Well, answers it on the floor.
Yes, there's no real coaching there.
He mentioned this, Jimmy. So you have the cut from the conference call on Rozier from yesterday. And this was sort of more of the same after game four, which is pick your poison, throw your hand up, and sort of conceding the whole thing. Here's Brad Stevens on the switches with Rozier and Rozier getting stuck on LeBron.
You know, we'll continue to mix it up, but at the end of the day, we didn't feel like that's what beat us. You know, again, it goes back to the offense and the transition. LeBron's going to score some on anybody, and you have to make it as tough as possible. The first two times he had Terry in isolation, he shot a great turnaround from 16 feet. Terry contested. He was fading away. It was a heck of a shot. Tip your hat. You go to the other end. The next play, Terry fouled him by swiping at the same shot, probably out of the desire to make that a little bit tougher to change the result from the previous one. But there were some actions that, or some plays that I think we can do a better job of making it more difficult and avoiding that matchup. But it's going to happen some. That's part of the poison, because there's such great three-point shooters around, and if you get running around too much or unorganized, that's when they just spray those threes on you, and then you have no chance. It's a fine line. It's a balance. But those things were not as impactful, in my opinion, as the offensive inefficiencies and transition defense.
Okay, so he keeps implying that brilliant long pass from Kevin Love to LeBron, for example, or LeBron's pass to Tristan Thompson on the break was more hurtful than LeBron breaking down Terry Rozier. And he said offensive inefficiencies, or whatever that word was.
Yeah, offensive inefficiencies.
Meaning missing dunks and layups.
Right, because it creates transition.
But what's your thought on that?
So when I hear him talk about the transition defense, I sort of look at it and say, I needed the coach to tell me that? No kidding. Like LeBron in transition, that is so basic, it's not even worth discussing
okay,
in my mind.
What he's saying is that's a bigger defensive problem for them. They were worse than that.
Right, but if that's his only answer, well, then...
Well, no, but what he's saying is, in game one, they were great. They allowed no transition points. So he's saying, I'm more concerned about shoring that up than I am getting Terry Rozier off LeBron. That's what he's saying.
Okay, but again, I don't look at that as being great coaching. Like, I just look at that and say, anybody can say that. Like, so this, to me, gets into the argument of, you know, what can Stevens really do to stop LeBron? What, tell your players to get back? No kidding. Of course. Yes, don't let LeBron get in the open floor. Make it like that part of me is basic. I still look at the half court and say, no, there's got to be more there. You have to, if I would rather him say, and maybe this is what he's saying in his defense, let LeBron get all the ones he wants. We'll take the two. We can't give up the threes to J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver and Kevin Love. If those guys get off, and we are letting them get threes, we are going to lose. So we would rather switch, have LeBron one-on-one with Terry Rozier. We'll take that.
So it feels like, again, just to sum up, that they're not going to change much on that because they're okay with that. They're okay with LeBron backing down Terry Rozier and just getting what he wants, which I think is insane. The league has gotten so goofy. And watching a little bit of that game last night, it's like everyone's okay with just chuck, which is bombs away. You know, low percentage just – and I know it's Harden and Curry – but just launching from ridiculous distance, they're okay with that. Meaning, they're okay with missing those offensively, and they're trying to defend them defensively, versus getting an easy two from a big guy against a little guy inside. I just think it's, God, the league has gotten so crazy with the threes. But that looks like their strategy. Go ahead, LeBron, back him down, take your two. We just don't want Korver hitting a three. Okay, we'll see if that works. Jimmy,
see, to me, that was the defense to play going into the series. I would rather LeBron get 50 than have those other guys combine for 40.
Jimmy, is this a big one for Brad Stevens tonight?
It's the biggest game he's ever coached in his career.
I think Jimmy's right. I mean, you know, on your home floor, with all the hype around Stevens, and again, look, I think it's been overblown. He's a good coach.
Got it, but...
But to me, like, if he comes out tonight and they're in a big spot and his team blows it and they don't have any real creative or clever answers, then I think he takes a little bit of a hit there.
Beal and Zoe asked him about this very thing earlier today. Jimmy, let's hear that. The Zoe question.
Coach, I'm up for you personally. There's been a lot of talk that this is a big game for you, maybe the biggest as head coach of this basketball team. How do you balance that?
I have a blast. I'm coaching basketball. Are you kidding me? I realize what a joke it is that I get to do this for a living. You know, I'm looking forward to the challenge. We're getting a chance to play and compete against the best player of this generation and guys that have been there, done that on a championship stage for them. Like, Kevin Love's a good player. Kyle Korver's a good player. J.R. Smith's a good player. They're getting contributions from a lot of guys. George Hill, go down the line. Like, this is a great challenge, and I want our guys to have fun. You know, I think one of the things, the longer you're in it, and I haven't been in it, I guess, as long as, you know, a lot of other people, but the longer I've been in it, the more I've just come to appreciate the opportunities, and I'm not losing sleep over things I can't control. You just go after it. Go after it and compete.
Do you think this is the biggest game you've ever coached in the NBA tonight? This it?
I think every game's the biggest game. I don't look at any game any different, to be honest. I mean, obviously, when you're talking about game sevens of series or games where you've already lost three, like, your season's over if you lose those. But I think games in November, like, as I'm getting ready, it's the most important thing I've ever done is coach that game. And it's no different tonight, but that'll be no different in game six. And then, you know, we'll see where we end after that.
Okay. So, what are the stakes tonight for Brad Stevens? We pick up that topic after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Jimmy has demoted him. He's no longer Coach Stevens. Jimmy's mad at Brad. So you think this one was on Stevens, Jimmy?
Yep, it's all on Brad. I hope Brad watched the film. We're calling him Brad today because he got out-coached. And also, Brad had no answer for George Hill. George friggin' Hill. Brad had no answers for.
No, Coach Stevens.
Someone doesn't want to go to game five.
Or doesn't mind sitting in the 300s.
Just Brad, when it's not okay. And your coach like doo-doo, just Brad. LeBron had his way. And your coach like boo-boo, just Brad. When it's not okay. And you pissed off Chase too, just Brad.
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 Brad. Just Brad.
It's Brad. Do better tonight, Brad.
All right, Jimmy Stewart says the biggest game he's ever coached until Game 6 and Game 7. But this, let's just say, this is the most important stretch he's ever had. But this goes back to Gasper's question, too. I mean, honestly, I don't think I agree, guys. Because I think this is a toss-up series that the Celts shouldn't be expected to win, even after they went up 2-0. So it's like I've converted to a Brad bot. He makes a difference, and he's a difference-making coach. But he doesn't make all the difference. It's still going to be about the players.
So wait, what don't you agree with? You don't agree with Gasper? Or you don't agree that this is like the biggest game he's ever coached?
Both. I don't agree with Gasper that the
But Gasper said it's a choke.
Right. I don't agree with that.
Oh, it is a choke.
Like, yeah.
Right. I just disagree.
Okay.
I disagree that it's a choke. And I don't think that... Well, I mean, these are big games for Stevens. But I still think he's basically proven what he is. I think he's basically proven what he is. I mean,
sure.
You can't take away that Philadelphia win. I know it's only one of them, but it is a young, undermanned team, so they're supposed to lose most of these games. They've won more games than they were supposed to. I mean, let's just put it to you like that. I mean, that's going to apply whether they win this series or lose, right?
Yes.
I mean, they won more games than they were expected to, even into the playoffs. So now that they don't pull off another upset, suddenly the shine's off the rose? I don't know.
No, absolutely not. I mean, they're essentially down to a seven-man rotation. You're down your two best players, one that you lose 6 minutes into the season. This is all gravy. I know, look, being up 2-0, if they end up losing this series, especially if they lose four straight here, if that's, you know, that ends up happening, it sucks, but come on. Like, the only thing that would have been a major disappointment and a choke is if they ended up blowing that series in the first round of the Bucks. That's it. Anything else past that, I'm happy with.
Chris Gasper says if the Celtics lose this series, it will be a major disappointment.
Thank you.
Ha! That they've established themselves as the deeper, better team. They've played at home like it's the 1986 Celtics, and two of the final three are at home. So if they lose, it's a major disappointment. So back to your phones. Mike in Abington. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good, Mike. What do you got?
So basically regarding Celtics' horrible performance in games 3 and 4, in spite of the team being a great team full of great players, great talent, and great coaching, they continue to lose, and I attribute that to their lack of focus, which I can attribute to their age, their youthful, their lack of experience, and lack of discipline, so the game becomes a crapshoot.
Okay, so if they're too tight, like I can sort of accept too tight. They're 20-year-old kids playing at Cleveland for the Eastern Conference Finals. Too tight. Unfocused? I will not accept that. Yeah, that's a joke.
That's not the word I would use. I would say that they're experiencing something they really haven't had to experience before, and they're not. Some of them aren't totally ready for it.
Jason and Lowell, go ahead, Jason.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Murray kind of actually stole my thunder. That I can't. Gasper and James are just idiots. This is not a joke. Nobody ever thought that they would even get this far, for one. And I'm just enjoying great basketball. Yes. I was frustrated when they were bricking the dunks, and Brad was even upset because Brown was supposed to let the clock go down, but he never did, so he went up for the dunk and missed it. But me, I'm just enjoying the basketball, and you can call me a Brad bot or whatever you want to call me, but what is Brad supposed to do when his bench is, what, Smart and Monroe? Like, what is he supposed to do? He's just doing what he's supposed to do with the team that he has.
And it's, so what's he supposed to do about guys missing dunks? How's that on the coach?
It's not.
Or 15 layups. Like, Jimmy Stewart, you don't feel like you're playing with house money as a Celtics fan right now?
Nope. You're up 2-0. Win the series. Close it out.
See, under normal circumstances, I would say that, yes. But
they don't make those excuses where you guys are right now at TD Garden. They don't make them. So we're just gonna be like, oh well, LeBron's the best player in the league, so it's kind of a pick 'em. It's kind of a I don't know series. But you had a 2-0 lead and you're gonna blow it? That's a choke. That is a major choke from this basketball team if they lose two of the next three games. Choke.
The co-owner sat here a week ago and basically sounded like he was just happy to be here. Like, I don't think that they have that kind of expectation, and maybe in the locker room, but organizationally, I think that they're also looking at this as, this is gravy. I mean, after those two injuries to Hayward and Irving, that they're this far
and they're the number two seed. They're a higher seed than the Cavs are.
Okay,
and if home court matters in the NBA, which we all are in agreement that it does, you should win four of these games and be in the NBA Finals next week.
Okay, but the seeding, Jimmy, was built with Kyrie in the lineup. That's not, he's not in the lineup anymore. Like, so to me, you throw the seeding out. Now, the home court thing? The home court helps. There's no two ways about it. If they didn't have home court, they definitely lose.
And Toronto had come back and were challenging you for the number one seed overall. So it does matter. It does matter. And if the Celtics don't win this season, it's a massive choke.
Okay, Mark and Lowell, your thoughts on the home court?
So, the fourth game was actually tough to watch for all of us. But if indeed Brad Stevens is out of tricks, he has no more tricks in his bag, do you think that if he comes in with the same, basically the same plan he had for game four, because he has nothing else, do you think that it's going to be enough to win game five?
Yes, it could be. Yep. If they do the exact same things and you just dunk the basketball versus rifling it off the back rim, and some of those gutless bums in Cleveland turn back into gutless bums, Stevens could do the exact same thing with the exact same rotations, the exact same minutes, the exact same play calls, and win the game, don't you think?
Maybe.
Make your layups.
So I'll tell you what, I don't love that whole thing with switching Rozier off of LeBron and having him running out to the corner to try to defend a three from the other side of the floor. I just think that leaves them vulnerable to that three. I would rather Rozier stay on LeBron and LeBron score 60. So this is where I disagree with Stevens. Because I think that this, to me, what this series has shown is that if the Cleveland role players play well, Cleveland wins. If the Cleveland role players don't, Cleveland loses. LeBron scored how many in game two? 42, whatever the number was. and they lost because the other guys couldn't, you know, couldn't really contribute. So to me, I stick to that. The whole idea of, you know, we got to get Rozier off of LeBron, I don't believe in that. That whole idea of it, Rozier looked like he was running around with his head cut off in that last game. If I'm Stevens, let LeBron score on Rozier. Who gives a rat's ass?
But don't you think Stevens is implying that that's what's going to happen?
No, not entirely, because he said...
Well, I do. I think every answer he's given to that, man, as we played it, where he said, you've got to pick your poison, and that's not our issue. The issue is transition defense. The issue is getting sprayed on the three-point line. I think he is content to let Rozier just sit there and get pounded.
Yeah, but he still says, too, that they want to... Maybe he's saying some of that, but he's also saying, you know, we're going to continue to mix it up. Don't mix it up. Let LeBron get all the points he wants in the paint.
Okay, we have a long commercial-free segment coming up next. We've hit on Brady and Robert Kraft's comments this morning that I found outrageous. Outrageous. I thought what Robert had to say, what Robert said today about the Brady situation was so bad that it almost defies description. But I'll give it to you. I'll describe it to you. We have that. We have Celtics-Cavs, obviously. And coming up next, we'll give you a little Red Sox minute. They went again last night in Tampa. Maz has some thoughts for you right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Kissing goodbye!
Maz calls a Mookie. We call a Mookie. It's Betts.
A three-run bullet.
Maz calls a Mookie. We call a Mookie. It's Betts.
Number 16.
Maz calls a Mookie. We call a Mookie. It's Betts.
Apparently, Mr. Betts does not like to be tied with anybody in home runs.
He's the best ball player in the major leagues. It's Betts.
Another three-run shot for Mookie Betts.
Mookie? Is that how you say it?
I don't know.
I mean, everyone says it Mookie, except for one person that I know, and that's the man to my right.
How do you say it?
Mookie.
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 Who hit the ground ball through Buckner's legs?
Mookie Blaylock. No. Mookie, that's the basketball.
Mookie Wilson.
Mookie Blaylock was a...
Was a basketball
player. Basketball player that Pearl Jam was named after.
Right.
Mookie Wilson.
Mookie Wilson.
Mookie Wilson. Okay, and if you go like Oreos and you buy chocolate chip...
Cookies.
Cook. Cookie, not cookies.
Okay, well, the
you don't buy cookies, do you?
The individual determines how his name is pronounced.
A first-year player is called a rookie, not a rookie.
Thoughts on Mookie Betts, the win last night, or anything related to the Red? This is the Red Sox Minute.
So another pull home run for Mookie Betts.
Great.
So I will say, look, he's having a fabulous year. I mean, at the current pace, like you're talking about almost a 50-home-run pace with this guy.
Triple crown kind of stuff.
I'd be shocked if he keeps it up, but he has been the best player in baseball here in the early part of the year. And as much as I joke about his pull home runs, that one last night was not your typical pull home run. If you watch it, the ball almost sort of jammed him. Like, he almost had to pull his hands in here and swing the bat like, you know, like he couldn't extend his hands at all. I don't know how he hit that ball out of the ballpark. I don't. So I give Mookie his love. He's been off the charts good, and I think he and J.D. Martinez are tremendous compliments to one another, and I'll spare you all the X's and O's because I'm going to do it later in the week. Okay? But the J.D. Martinez side of the equation, I'm starting to get a little annoyed by the guy. Like, it feels like he's getting a lot of love lately, which he deserves. But he did a story over the weekend where Frank Thomas called him the best hitter in baseball over the last year plus, since the start of the 2017 season. And yet he did a story over the weekend where he's asked about the love he's getting, and he goes on to say how it's so out of the ordinary that he feels like he never gets the love. And I'm reading you directly a quote now from that original story where he says, to me, baseball has their guys, and they're going to advertise them. If you're not one of those, you better walk on water. That's what we always laughed about, meaning in Arizona last year, saying, bro, you have to walk on water to make that show. It's cool to at least get some recognition. So it feels to me like, so he's annoyed at the fact that he doesn't get the love? Is that the deal? Or is he just saying it as a statement of fact? But it sounds like he's annoyed. Because why bring it up if you're not annoyed? Then he did a story with Sean McAdam in the last couple of days on the Boston Sports Journal on Bedard's site. And he says, I stay quiet. I keep more to myself. I try to avoid the media. not purposely, but just because media and fans, no disrespect, they just bring noise. They bring questions. They bring awareness. Oh, do you know you're doing this or do you know you're doing that? Dude, let's just play. Well, so which one is it? Like, if you want the shows to talk about you and show the highlights, well, my guess is they're going to come and talk to you about it, and then are you going to accommodate them or not? So are you either the kind of guy that doesn't care about that, and you're just going to show up and hit, or you're the kind of guy that says, how come these guys get all the love? They got their guys. I'm not one of them. Well, like, so I don't know which one it is. Now, look, at the end of the day, I don't really care.
Do you know why JD Martinez doesn't get the love in the pub? He was released 3 years ago.
Okay, but again,
and so, he's just the numbers last year and a half speak for themselves. But just 3 years before that, he was on the street, and the first half of the year they were just good, not great. And the second half of the year before, I mean, whatever. I mean, it's like he's not a bona fide year in, year out producer. Like the guys I think he's whining about, the Trouts or the Harpers or those guys, he hasn't put up those kind of numbers. I mean, he has for half seasons, but he hasn't done it for a career like those guys has. So that's why he doesn't get the pub.
So why does he care about it?
I don't know.
So I don't know what. Does he care about it or not care about it? And again, at the end of the day, I don't care. If he hits, I couldn't give a rat's ass. As long as he keeps hitting, fine. That's what they brought him here to do, and he's done it marvelously so far. But yet again, it's like you see the results, and it's unbelievable. Anytime they start talking, you start liking them less. It's unbelievable. That said, you know, he and Betts have been an absolute force, and, you know, it feels to me like every time they play Tampa, it's a freaking tractor pull. You know, Kimbrel wanted to blow that game in the ninth inning last night. Nonetheless, they get out of there with a W and, you know, play another crap bag team and, you know, stick another one in the win column. But, you know, I just have a hard time getting inspired about wins over Tampa.
Let me jump Alex and Newton, your buddy. He wants to talk baseball, so we'll let him go here. Go ahead, Alex.
Jimmy, pop him up. Right when I heard you do the jab about the pull home run, Maz, that's cute. You know, I called a while ago on that petty phone call I had, and I made the mistake by saying Mookie had a long swing. That's not what I meant. I meant he had good plate coverage. He can really somehow still turn on the balls that are far away, almost on the outside half. And I know that you wanted Giancarlo, by the way, because he has a pretty face and JD has lead in his ass. That's why you didn't want him. That's fine. But in terms of re-signing Mookie Betts, John Henry and the Red Sox are looking at maybe the most important player they have to re-sign, and that's Mookie Betts. And I don't, John Lester, no, it's absolutely Betts. From a marketing angle, he is the most sellable thing they've had in a long time. For a sport that is dwindling with popularity, he is the person that will put the asses in the seats. It is imperative that they re-sign Mookie Betts. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They have to.
Agree. When it comes to re-signing Mookie Betts, they're in deep, deep trouble.
They really are.
Meaning, I'm not saying they can't get him. It's just going to cost them. So he's not going to give them a cent off, it doesn't feel like. He's not going to give them any consideration. He hasn't to this point. He has refused to sign any contract they put in front of him. Even the ones that he's actually been playing under have been just non-exclusive rights tags,
correct,
right? Like,
yes.
There's nothing. He hasn't agreed to arbitration, hasn't agreed to, he agreed to arbitration, but wouldn't accept their settlement offer. Like, he has taken every, even these little low-level contracts you get in the first and second year, he's taken every one to the mat, which means, you look out. How many years does he have left of arbitration?
So I think after this one, he's got at least two more.
So this one and then two more.
Yep.
So you got 2+ years. It's a long time. But if he keeps his pace and he's due, if you don't make him the highest paid player in the game, he's gone.
He's not going to sign. He's not going to sign before he gets to the market. And Alex is right about the fact that he is the most important guy. There's no two ways about it. He's better than Bogarts. He blows Bradley out of the water. We all know that. And he's better than Benintendi. I'm sorry. Like, Benintendi to me is becoming sort of annoying too, but that's another story. And frustrating is a better way to put it, because it's more about his ability than it is about, you know, his personality. But the case, like, go back a year when it came out that they offered Mookie 5 years and $100 million. Don't you laugh at that now? 5 years and 100? That's nowhere near what that guy's going to get.
Double it. Double it, and that's what you're looking at with Mookie Betts.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.